Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
We're brought to you today by Manscaped, who has taken a step up from Balloween, that's right, to bring your face the cleanest shave it's ever seen. So this season, no need to toil and trouble. Manscaped's all-new Handyman is the best way to get rid of that stubble, featuring a compact design and next-gen skin-safe technology. The Handyman was designed to give you that smooth finish without the mess of a traditional shave. Get the sweetest treat this Halloween by going to manscaped.com and use the code POA for 20% off plus free shipping. Y'all know we've been talking about Manscaped for it feels like the length of this program, and I truly love them. Actually, I just got through cleaning up my head with my Manscaped razor. The beard hedger, y'all know, is great. I love it because it doesn't have a bunch of guards. It's just got a little clicky, clicky thing. I wish more things had a clicky, clicky thing instead of add-on things. That's just me. And of course, even though it's becoming fall in the South, it's still a little warm. And I know where Trey is in California, it is. So you can never go wrong with the ball toner and the ball deodorant to keep your balls smelling way less like balls, right? Trey, tell them a little bit more about our friends over at Manscaped.
It may be spooky season, but you don't want to scare people with a scraggly beard. Now, do you? Give them something to look at with Manscaped's Handyman. Are you tired of a bad razor making your neck look like a scary movie? With the Handyman skin-safe technology to help reduce nicks and cuts, you can finally feel confident when going for that close shave. For wet or dry use, feel free to bring this anywhere and everywhere. The compact design and airplane friendliness make this the perfect travel tool for on the go. And being able to shave up to 3 days growth without the mess of a wet shave is priceless. And for my wolf men with a little more scruff out there, Manscaped's Beard Hedger Pro Kit has everything you need to tame your mane. This cordless trimmer has a rotary wheel that gives you 20 haircutting lengths all with one guard, so no more drawers full of extra add-ons collecting cobwebs. That's right, your Halloween costumes may take effort, but beard grooming doesn't need to when you can get 20 different beard lengths with just one guard. The Beard Hedger is a high-tech piece of art in a travel-size package with a long-lasting battery, universal charging, and a strong motor. There's no trick with this treat. Manscaped has you covered. So, to get 20% off and free shipping, use the code POA at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com when you use the promo code POA. For a look as sweet as candy, get yourself the handy man from Manscaped. Well, here we are, Airheads. We're back in the virtual Airstream studios. I'm in the present day, Cho's in the distant past, it would appear. If you're watching, then you know that he's in black and white. But more importantly than that, and I want an answer for that, but more importantly than that, he also has freed the bee, ladies and gentlemen, a monumental day in not only POA history, but the history of my relationship with this man. Freeing the bee means that he's got his bald head open to God's own air. Nothing between him. He's just raw dogging the top half of his environment with his bald head, which normally I've never known him to do. So it's a pretty big time. I feel like it's a trend because you, this past weekend, you were forced into freeing the bee in Los Angeles because you left all your hats behind on accident. And now here you're choosing to do it. I'm just saying, looks like you're changing.
I exaggerate a lot. We both do. We're comedians. You know, obviously, you know, me and you are, I would say, in the comedic genre, we are of the truth-telling variety, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
We're freedom fighters, warriors, truth warriors. We speak truth to power, you know, all that stuff.
Sure.
We're heroes.
Too. But I thought you, yeah, we are. Go ahead. I'll tell you what I thought you meant in a minute and see where you stand on,
that. What I meant by, regardless of whether that is true, that is not to say that in some areas we don't embellish things for a better story. And I've often spoken in hyperbole. I'm a very hyperbolic man. But I genuinely think that I can say with 100% certainty that I have never appeared on camera for entertainment purposes unless I was playing a character without a hat. I genuinely think that's true. This is a monumental moment for me.
And why, you know, what brought it about?
Well, I'm doing, today we're going to talk about Harry Houdini. This is definitely going to be at least a two-parter, maybe a three-parter, because one of the things that I feel that needs to be contextualized to appreciate Houdini more is the vaudeville era. And so with the vaudeville era, I thought, oh, it'd be neat to go black and white, kind of look a little old school, put on an old school shirt and tie. And then I was like,
no,
oh,
blackface? You opted against the blackface?
It's so funny.
That might have more quickly sold the whole thing. You wouldn't have had to explain it then if you'd just done that. But
right.
You know.
That was going to come up. I mean, that is going to come up. Blackface is going to come up. And I'm not kidding, man. And I don't know what this says about me. But like, if we were doing this podcast 10 years ago, there's a part of me that believes that I might have done it thinking I could pull it off. Like, oh, no, yeah. They'll know that it's a gag. You know what I'm saying? Because like that's blackface is really, you know, it did have its moment where it was OK. It was never good. But there was a little moment where everybody was like, right. But if you're making fun of blackface, it's fine.
That and I wasn't, we were too young for this. But like that version of blackface, the like old school minstrel blackface.
Yeah.
I mean, Ted Danson caught all kinds of shit for that.
Right.
When he wore blackface to some award show, he was dating Whoopi Goldberg, and it was her idea.
Yeah.
I mean, they both said it was her idea, but still, he got raked over the coals for that, and that was like 30-something years ago.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like, but then there's like
Robert Downey Jr.
Of course, and it's like that. I'm sorry, that don't count. That's
it
a different
count.
Thing.
Frankly,
in my opinion,
I don't think that Ted Danson should have counted the same either, because he was doing it to lampoon it. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yes.
Like there's nuance to it.
And then there was a more
Always
recent
Sunny
one
in Philadelphia.
Yeah. What they? I mean, they get away with everything.
They
right?
do get away like, with everything. But so they in Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the characters in the show, like we're trying to make a movie. So one of them wrote a script for like Lethal Weapon 6.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And Mac played Riggs, and he went in blackface.
Murtaugh,
the one who is too old for this shit, and he did it in blackface. And like the reason that they got away with it in the show is because the joke is that Mac thinks that's okay, and Mac is a piece of shit. Like Mac is like in the show, Mac is like a hardcore at this time in the show, hardcore fundamentalist Christian, super homophobic. So like the joke was that like of course he thinks it's okay, which again I think with the nuance it's like, yeah, that's fine.
Well, even there was one on the internet within the past 3 or 4 months. It was a white woman.
Really?
Yeah. But and I feel like it was fine. And but anyway, it was a white woman who's a makeup artist, and she turned herself into Kobe Bryant with makeup, right?
That's kind of different,
But like,
because she pulled it off,
looked
right?
Exactly like fucking right. Kobe Bryant. She went from a white woman using just makeup, you know. And I mean, I guess I don't know enough about makeup. I don't know if she's like a full blown like special effects makeup artist in the movies
right.
or what. But using just makeup, she turned herself from a white woman into straight up Kobe Bryant. And there was this big debate online about, like, you know, whether that was cool or not. And I feel like people mostly landed on,
it's just
because
impressive.
She knocked it out of the park
right.
the way she did. Most people landed on, like,
right.
I mean, you know, I'm kind of fine with it. Like,
yes.
that's crazy. Like, I saw a lot of.
If she just put charcoal black on her face and made her lips red and said, I'm Kobe Bryant, like, that's
yeah,
wrong.
It'd be pretty different. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's scary though, by the way, because I've seen some of those makeup people that like they're like, I'm gonna turn myself into this. And like, dude, it's not even like, oh, that looks like a person who has made themselves up to look like they fucking just straight up look like that person. Like I feel like they could get onto their phones using their face ID. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And when you compare that with what deepfakes be doing and stuff,
it's scary
nowadays. Like it's wild. You know, video evidence won't mean shit anymore at a certain point. Which
yeah,
is,
like I'm not one of those. I'm not one of those like complete deep state QAnon, like, you know, the government's always watching and blah. I mean, they are, but like, I'm not one of those people. However, like, I genuinely, especially in our field of work, I do get worried about the deep fake stuff because they can do it with voices now too. So I'm like, yeah. And now I bet you it's hitting for a lot of people because they're like, now if I ever do fuck up, I can just claim that it was this and all my people will believe it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whatever. Anyways, that's why I'm in black and white, because I wanted to look like an old school vaudevillian dude, and all my hats that I would wear to pull that off, I can't fit my headphones on it. Thus, the B is free.
But I feel like it's still indicative of something. You're feeling more generally comfortable with your bald head or something like that.
It's being a dad.
Is that what it is? What, yep. You're just like letting go of your youth and everything?
Yeah, honestly.
Like, I don't need to hit anymore. I'm a dad now.
I'm being dead serious. Like, there's a lot of truth to that. Like, it's almost like I now, the body and way I look, I've now grown completely into it. Like when I was young, when I was younger and single, it didn't hit the way I was. But now, like, you know what I mean? But like, dads are supposed to be bald and have a gut. Like, that's what dads do. Now, obviously, I'm you know, working on the gut part of it, as a lot of people know. Like, my gut, I've definitely gained weight since we had the kid, but I'm still net positive down weight overall from my fattest. But like, yeah, man, I don't know. Like, I'm officially out of the, I always wanted to just be with Amber. But when you have the kid, I'm like, okay, I hang the jersey in the rafters. You know what I mean? It's fucking over.
But, and I love this. I've been trying to get you to do this for 10 years. I've been trying to get you to accept all this and just go, you know, full cho, full bald cho. It's been my crusade for a long time. So I love it. I guess just playing devil's advocate or whatever, because you already know that I don't even believe what I'm about to say myself, but you're like, oh, I don't even want to, you know, I'm married. I'm a kid. I have a kid, whatever. All that's done. But like, we're in show business, right? Yeah. But as you know, I've always told you in show business, like, you can hit real hard looking like a fat, bald dad or whatever.
And you. Yeah. You're starting to make me go back the other way now.
Yeah, but, see, I knew it would. We've had this conversation so much over the years, but it's like true. It's like, well, you know, like Jerry Seinfeld, your idol, he said that, like, any comedian gains or loses 50 pounds and they're not funny anymore.
That's
true. They're no longer funny. And it's like right now there's a thing happening. We can get into it as much. It's actually, I mean, it is kind of directly relevant to this show, really.
Okay.
But like, Tom Segura is, you know, one of the biggest comedians on planet Earth, and he's in some hot water right now because he's been acting super elitist, and he's got a running gag where he makes fun of the poor's. But he's been doing that for a long time. But
it seems like there's not a punchline.
Yes, I agree. But I'm saying I've seen a lot of people online talking about how, like, guy, he hit so much harder when he was fat, you know, and they're posting pictures of old fat him, and he was real fat, you know.
Yes,
and because people are like, this dude smashed, right?
Yes.
like this guy now, I don't know, he's kind of a dick or whatever. I still like Tom Segura. I don't like that thing he's doing, but I'm a pretty big fan of his.
Likewise.
But it's an interesting case study in the Seinfeld, you know, hypothesis.
Listen, there's truth to that. There's 100% truth to that, because when Tom was fat and didn't have full shaved, he was thinning, right? When he was fat and thinning, when he would make fun of the pores, I think the pores would look at him and be like, he looks like one of us. This is fine. You know what I mean? But now that he's svelte, clearly gets like, I mean, even though he just goes with shaved, it's like faded. Like, you can tell he spends money on getting his head shaved, and like everything he does is tailored. Well, now they don't want to hear that coming from him. And I totally understand that. And and you know, a big thing for me, I always said was, and I believe this, I 100% believe this. I have, when I'm wearing a hat and I'm wearing my, you know, Georgia t-shirt and my jeans and my tennis shoes, I can put off a very, all shucks, look at this kid, he's not serious, whatever. And I felt like I could get away with a lot of stuff. And then I'm like, but I take the hat off, all of a sudden I look like I have some very unpopular opinions on vaccinations that I'm about to share with each of you, whether you want me to or not, right? But now that I'm a dad, my material that I'm writing is more dad shit. So I'm like, well, you know what? Maybe I do want the audience to take me with more credibility and go, oh yeah, he looks like a dad. This guy is a dad. We relate now. Now I'm relating to different people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to wear a fucking hat the second we get off this goddamn show now.
Why?
For sure.
For what? Why?
Because I don't hit like this. Look at me. No, I don't. I don't.
Yes, you do.
No, you've talked me out of it.
I was trying to talk you into it.
Yeah, you did the wrong way. You're like, see, I've always said if you was fat and bald and looked dumb, you'd do a lot better in Hollywood.
I just mean you can. Like,
yeah.
Because you're.
Maybe.
You could, because like you're the Cho. You know the arguments. Yeah. We've had them before. Like the Cho is, you know, Good Time Charlie. That's you.
Yeah.
Party man.
I just look so fucking racist. Like the way I look like a wife beating fucking pillhead racist maniac, dude. And I already sound like one. So now when you add this to it, it's like, God damn, like, I don't know, man. Like, at least when I have a backwards hat on, someone might be like, well, he's a young, cool guy, whatever. This looks like, again, like I was there on January 6th. Like, I believe that, you know, Joe Biden has a lizard soul, all that shit.
Yeah, but the fatness part don't affect that, I don't think. I feel like...
Bullshit!
No. Hold on, dude. You're telling me if you see, like, a ripped, bald white guy... With tattoo, you know, especially if he's got like a beard or something, you don't think it's at least 50-50 that he's like January 60 or something?
Yeah. But hey, by the way, I just realized another thing, and this is how vain I am. Another reason that I'm a little bit more okay with it now than I was before is because I got my teeth fixed.
Uh-huh.
And my tooth, our teeth don't hit. I'm not going to sit here and act like your teeth hit either. But my tooth really didn't hit. So, like, when you have all these facial and body deformities that I have, you've got to at least cover one of them up because people can't go, look at his tooth, ooh, and his head. You know what I mean? So I wear a hat. But now that my teeth, I mean, they don't hit, but, like, I don't have that fucked up tooth here. They're a little bit more straight. They're a little bit more white. I feel more confident.
There's two other things, comedy adjacent, that we've almost touched on along the way that I now want to talk about briefly. I hope it hits for people. I don't know. The whole Tom Segura thing, if people kept up with that, my hypothesis or part of it is it's like, I think it's a similar thing that's happened with him, Joe Rogan, and Dave Chappelle, maybe among others that I'm not thinking of. And
they got ripped.
All three of those dudes, I'm a long time huge fan of. You know what I mean? It's like, not everything they do might not hit for me anymore, whatever. But
they're
like,
all great. They're
but
all
my
great.
Fandom goes back a long, long, long time with all three of them. And
you
yeah,
can't
right.
deny so, that they're not talented individuals who earned their
hit,
success.
Right. And I think with all three of them, I think that there's something about a lot of comedians where it's like they cannot stand being told, like, you can't say something, or you can't talk about something, or you shouldn't do something. You shouldn't make that joke or whatever, anything like that. And these do, especially when you're at that level, when you're that high level of a comedian, especially that happens. Like
the
fans
ego.
Are telling you, it's like, hey, I don't think you should joke about that thing anymore. Like, I don't think you should joke about the pores anymore, considering what's happened to you or whatever. I think that he goes, well, fuck that. Like,
I'll do it more.
Yeah. And then they just double down because it's like, you know, people don't tell me what I can and can't talk about. That's how a lot of comics feel. And I feel like that's what happened with Dave and trans people.
Yep.
And it's what happened with
Joe Rogan and vaccines.
And the vaccines during COVID and everything. Same thing. It's like they start getting a little bit of pushback and they're like, you don't tell me what to do. And then they double down on it and then they just dig in deeper and deeper.
I agree.
That's my theory on how that works.
I agree 100%. And I'll add to that. Even comedians, like, you have to, in order to pursue, and I don't just mean comedy, any type of entertainment, you have to have a little bit of a self-inflated ego or a bigger sense of self, because you have to assert importance on something that actually does not, in the grand scheme of things, matter. Right.
So, i.e. your opinion on a thing,
you know, like people that go like, yo, no, comedians, we're philosophers. And like, comedy can say, like, dude, shove that up your fucking ass. Like, shove that up your fucking ass. Now, I'm not saying if you have a big platform and you have opinions that you want to share that you shouldn't be able to do that. Good Lord. Imagine us saying that you shouldn't do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But We are self-flagellating motherfuckers, and that's even base level comics that aren't even that successful. So when you actually get massive success, like all three of those people have, all of your self-biases have been confirmed 100,000 times over. You know what I mean? So it's not only a challenge, it's not only you're right, they feel like it's their fucking duty to do the thing that people say that you can't do, because that's how they got to where they are in the first place, by bucking the trends, by going against the status quo, all that bullshit. And also, money makes you feel fucking invincible. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're onto something. I know this ain't going to hit for you, but I feel like if I don't say it, we'll get emails about it or something. You said self-flagellating in the middle of that.
Uh-huh.
I think you meant self-flagellating.
Flagellating, yeah, because flagellation is hitting yourself,
scourging yourself. Yeah.
I know the difference. I just didn't want to.
They are close.
Yeah.
The other comedy philosophy,
we do self-flagellate as well.
No, I'm a self-flagellating motherfucker.
Yeah,
I stay flagellating myself, cuz.
Me too.
Way more than I flagellate myself.
Yep.
I live to flagellate myself.
We almost exclusively
shame. Yeah.
We right. flagellate ourselves. The only
I
time
sit around
we,
all goddamn day flagellating myself.
Me
you know,
too. You and I used to have a routine after shows that we crush where we would go in the room and self-flagellate. But it was a brief and fleeting moment that led to the next day even an increase in flagellation. You know what I mean? Because what's the one where you suck your own dick?
Filleting.
The more filleting, the longer you do that, the worse the come down, and thus the flagellation becomes increased.
Yes.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Macy's, Adidas, Walmart, Nike, Wine.com, Samsung, Lenovo, Sephora, and more. And even stack sales on top of cashback. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
So the other comedy philosophy thing we sort of like touched on along the way, I wanted to ask, you called us truth tellers, somewhat tongue in cheek. I'm aware we're heroes, whatever. But I thought you were actually saying, I have thought before.
That's you, right?
Yeah, sorry. Okay. My sister's calling me in.
I've thought before that there are like two schools of thought in comedy in terms of that. Meaning like I've heard comics say it's like that. Some of the stuff that happened with like Louis C.K. and people like that, for example, it's like what sucks about that is like now people think that, you know, everything, like people expect us to only say things that are true. Basically,
exactly.
Like you can't just say things. You can't just say something anymore that you're just hitting with. You're just totally making up or whatever. And I've heard comics say versions like that. And I've always been kind of sitting in the corner, like sort of being like, wait, y'all are doing that. Cause I don't really do that. Meaning I don't have a problem with people doing that, but like you said, I will exaggerate for comedic effect or whatever, but like
I'm not going to make up a story.
I don't make shit up. Yeah, right. I mean, I don't know. I don't
make a true thing hit harder.
I don't think about things that way. But yeah, no, if I say some kind of anecdote or I talk about pretty much anything on stage, there's a healthy element of truth to it.
For the record, I wish
you come and see me. Like, it may be exaggerated, but it's not made up. I'm fine with comics who do make shit up for comedy.
I wish that I possessed that. I just don't do that. Fiction writing is harder. You know what I mean? Like, right. Fiction writing is harder. Like, but again, you know, me and what we'll do is, like, we'll be talking about a story that happened between us and our buddy, when in reality it was an amalgamation of four different buddies. But it makes more sense if it's just one conversation, right?
Yeah.
So that is making something up, but it's taking little bits of the truth and putting it here. And I'm sure that also, like, sometimes when we're telling a joke, and, you know, we're having that funny conversation, oftentimes maybe we didn't actually say that thing out loud, but we thought about saying it out loud. You know what I mean? So, like, there's still that kernel. But then you got the Hasan Minhaj shit where it's like, motherfucker, holy fuck.
Right. Well, elaborate. People, all of our fans probably may not know what you're talking about when you say the Hasan Minhaj stuff. Like,
his whole, like, rise to fame was from this special. And I'm hearing this after now this has all happened. Like, and I wasn't someone who was, like, actively not a Hasan Minhaj fan. The only thing I knew about Hasan is that we had a buddy, and I won't say his name just in case, you know, I don't want to libel anything. We had a buddy who wrote for his show. So naturally I rooted for his success, you know, because I had a buddy that was in his orbit, right? But I'm not someone that usually actively seeks out, like, and this is weird, a lot of people would think that I would be, but, like, I don't normally seek out political humor for my, like, entertainment. You know what I mean? I like your videos. I like small doses of stuff, but I don't normally, like, The Daily Show and John Oliver from time to time, those were, like, my last things. Anywho, apparently Hasan, one of his big breaks was telling this story about how when he was in school, he either a girl, like, turned him down for prom in, like, a very public way, and it was because he was a Muslim, and, like, it was embarrassing, but that built his character, and it was a chip on his shoulder or whatever, and it was just showing, like, all the racism and stuff he's had to face. Turns out that literally never happened. Now, let me, before we go on, say this. There absolutely is racism towards Muslims, and that situation 100% could have happened. But now that we find out that's not true, that totally gives ammo to all the people going, see, that don't even really ever happen, you know?
Right. Also, like, and she's not a public figure, but the girl in the story is real, right?
Right.
But she never did that.
And just got accused of being a racist publicly.
Yeah, right, exactly. And it's like, but they will know people, other people that went to their high school, people that there were mutual friends over, people in their communities and stuff are going to know who she is. But of course, those people also are probably going to know that that didn't actually happen. So they're going to mostly think that he is the lunatic in this scenario. But yeah, it's like, I was about to say, I do feel like it matters what you're making up. I said, I have no problem with a comedian making up shit just for jokes, but I mean, like, I don't know, silly shit or something, or like stuff,
stuff that doesn't matter, not libeling another human being.
Right. Stuff that's, like, heavy and impactful and stuff like that, I don't think that you ought to make up. Even I was actually going to tell a story saying this might be part of why I felt this way, is because really early on, and I'm not going to say his name either, even though, I mean, nobody knows who he is. It was just a guy that did stand up in Knoxville at the time I started. He had been doing it. He hadn't been doing it that long either, and he wasn't very good. But he was
the guy was from Knoxville. Surely not.
Right. I was brand new though, and I remember I just started, and he was like a staple. He was around a lot, and he had this thing he was doing, and it like never really worked. But like he'd be like, yeah, my wife is pregnant, and then he'd tell a bunch of like pregnancy jokes or whatever, right? But his wife wasn't pregnant, and then he would say that after doing it all, right? Like, so first of all, his jokes weren't that good. They didn't really hit. Then once he'd done it, he was like, I'm just fucking you guys. She's not pregnant. Yeah, not even color or whatever stuff. And then everybody would just be sitting there like, what the fuck was all that then?
Right. Like, if they hit, it'd be one thing.
Right. So it's like the jokes didn't hit anyway, but then that made it weird on top of it. And I remember just sitting back there watching it as a brand new comic and kind of being like, all right, well, don't do that, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, whatever the hell that is, don't do that.
Like number one, do the opposite in that you should be funny. But secondly, a huge rule here is don't give away the fucking game. You know what I mean? Because, and speaking of Houdini, who I'll be talking about later, comedy and magic are like sort of, they have a similar thing, which is the turn. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's a hidden thing. Once it is revealed, I'm not saying you can't enjoy a joke or you can't enjoy a magic trick over and over again. But once it's revealed, then it's like, okay, my surprise is gone. But then on the other hand, like if you do a stand-up act and then as soon as you close, you come back on stage and go, now here's what was true about this and here's what was true about, you know what I mean? Like fucking, you got to suspend disbelief.
Right. Yeah, and another example, and I say this, we can move off of comedy stuff in case some people aren't. I mean, I do too. I can always, right. I mean, most comedians love to talk comedy shit, and I feel like it's a very mixed bag and whether it hits for people on the other end or not. So,
right.
But the other thing I'll say, then move on, like you said, it's like, oh, you might have a story that's really about four other dudes, but you made it one dude just for simplicity's sake, or you might just something you thought about saying but didn't say, but in the story, you said whatever.
I'll attribute things to my uncle that wasn't actually my uncle. It was just a guy. It just funnier if it's my uncle.
That too. But one thing I've done, like it was in my special. If people watch my special, there's a line that always absolutely smashed. I say that Katie said to a coworker of ours in the South, the coworker of ours was talking about a girl who'd had a DUI, and the coworker said, "I'm going to pray for her."
Yeah.
And I said that Katie responded by saying, "That's crazy. I too am going to do nothing at all to actually help." Right. Yeah. And I had that line for a long time, and it always smashed. That is a real line. Katie didn't say it. I said it.
Of course. But yes, you can't tell an audience, listen how hard I am.
Exactly. But I can't sit up there and be like, listen how much I smashed this chick. Yeah. You know,
I've got a million of those. Everybody knows.
Right. Yeah.
Your job is to show funny, not tell funny. You know what I mean? Like you've got this funny line, but you can't go listen. And there's comedians that do that. And I love him as a entertainer and all that. But Ricky Gervais used to have a bit in his act where he would literally just go up there and read tweets that he responded to people.
Where
I'm like, dude, come on.
Yeah, I can't stand that. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to stand up there and just be like, listen how hard I hit this time. So you got to find a way. And Katie also is like, Jesus don't hit for her
either. A godless
whore. Like,
yeah.
Exactly. It is like spiritually true or whatever.
Right.
You know? But anyway, I'm glad we got off on all these tangents because I didn't really have much today because I've been real busy. I just got back. I just got back from Al Gore's place, which seems relevant to the show.
But how'd that go?
Not all that much happened, but I will, you know, I'll elaborate in a minute. But first, can you see my screen?
I sure can. It's loading. Yeah. I fucking love this. I'm so glad you're doing this.
Did you see this already?
Yes, but please play
it. Okay. When I start it, say something if you can't hear it. If you can hear it, just be quiet and let it play.
Okay.
All right. So here it goes.
We're very working class.
Be honest. I am being honest. What car did your dad drive you to school in?
So my dad...
No, one answer.
My dad...
What car was it?
All right, it's not a simple answer because...
What car did you... Get your dad to drive
it depends.
No.
Okay, in the 80s, my dad had a Rolls Royce.
For those just listening, and that's Victoria Beckham and David Beckham.
Yes.
And let me tell you, my first response to that was hilarious. My sister sent it to me, and she goes, "This is your wife," because Amber does that shit. Like, Amber, like, they're not fucking loaded by any means, but her dad has done very well for himself. Like, he taught school, which was his main job, but, you know, for the insurance. And then he built a lot of houses. He also owns a lot of land and stuff like that. And Amber will, and I'm sure she's listening to me pissed, she will constantly just be like, you know, growing up, it was just different, you know, not having a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Amber, like, everything was fine. Like, she's just convinced herself. And I love David Beckham here, which, by the way, do you know how fucking pissed off Victoria Beckham is at him right now.
Yeah. Well, but my thing with that, though, is like she literally called herself Posh Spice.
Right.
Like I thought the thing that surprised me about that clip when Katie showed it to me, it did hit for me. But David Beckham hits for me real hard in it. It's a funny clip and all that shit. But I was kind of surprised because I was like, this whole time I thought that was your whole deal.
Well,
you
know, now, granted, I mean?
Like granted, Posh Spice, you're the fancy one. I figured you'd be like a wrestling character bragging about your daddy's Rolls Royce or something. That's what I thought. That's how I thought you'd be. Like I was surprised she was cared enough to lie about it.
That's true. But back in the boy group, girl group type thing, you know, a lot of people were playing characters like Baby Spice was not actually a baby. Scary Spice.
Right.
Scary Spice. I didn't find that. They said that because she's black. I mean, let's face it. Like she was Scary Spice because when she went into, you know, fucking, I don't know, the Brummy part, they were like, oh, a donkey, you know? So that's why she's Scary Spice. So like, I get, you know, they wanted, they're like, we need one that's more like a Victorian
mom. I need to cut in
mom.
Real quick because I want to tell you that I was sitting here trying to think of a line to do in a stupid British accent that was racist. And I was saying, it's like, what do they call? Obviously, I'm not going to say the N-word. They don't use the N-word. What do they call them? And I was like, I think they say darky a lot. And then I was like, I don't know if I'm going to say that. And while I was thinking that, you, in the middle of me thinking that, my head, you go, I'm a donkey. And I was like, well, all right.
It
well.
Wasn't me
I was
saying
like, well,
it.
There it goes. Yeah,
but it's not me saying it. It's someone looking at Scary Spice, which, because again, dude, now like think about that for a second. She didn't dress up as like a ghoul or nothing like that. Like she just looked like a regular person, but she was Scary Spice. It has to be that.
Oh, dude, 100%. Yeah, and they've got another word, I think, over there that we don't have at all here. Yeah, have you ever heard? I mean, this is like a horrific slur over there, but I'm American and it's not here.
Right.
Do you know the word WOG?
No.
Well, yeah, I hadn't either, but that
is it an acronym? Like how WAP is an acronym?
No, I think it's a shortened name for like a type of doll. Like remember those little God, we're using so many problematic words. You remember the pickaninnies?
Yeah, 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 yes.
Yeah, the little racist little black girl dolls or whatever. And
yeah,
they had those in the UK too. But over there, they were called WOG or something. And so, I don't know. I could be wrong about all this. But I think that that's where it comes from. But, yeah, that's like another version of the N-word that they use over there. But I knew if I used that, nobody would know it.
Sure. I'd be fine doing an episode, by the way, where we just talk about slurs from different parts of Europe, if you want to do that.
Yeah,
I'm kidding, everybody. I'm absolutely kidding. But it is interesting, you know, how like you could say something. You could go loudly in this country, say a thing that is horrifically offensive somewhere else, and no one here knows what the fuck you're talking about. But I feel like the N-word transcends all that. Like everyone knows that one. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think they're at least aware of it. So yeah, it was a gollywog, often shortened to golly or wog, was a type of rag doll that was like horrifically racist and popular in Britain and Australia. It says they had them over here too, but I don't know if they were able to penetrate the already saturated racism market in America when those came out.
We like our racism, like we like our fat.
But yeah. You were saying about, you know, she wasn't, Baby Spice wasn't a baby, Scary wasn't Scary, yada, yada. But to be fair, Posh Spice has been around and present in the media as Posh Spice for way longer than
she's the most famous.
And she's always been super fancy and posh looking. Like even way after the band was over or whatever, she was out in public being all fancy pantsy and shit, and people were calling her Posh Spice and stuff. So
everyone in Hollywood wants to present themselves as they worked really hard to get
absolutely
where they are.
I think again,
and she probably did, but you know,
right? Well, it's like Tom Segura works super hard too, like without a doubt. But like,
His dad was the vice president of Merrill Lynch.
You don't hear him talk about that. I mean, he doesn't act like they grew up poor, but he definitely doesn't like own up to being like essentially a trust fund kid or whatever.
Nick Kroll's the only one that does.
I'd about to say Nick Kroll kind of is the only one that owns it. Yeah, because I've been fucking with Segura for a long time and listening to his shit for a long time, and I've heard him talk about his dad and all this stuff, and it's like, you know, he's not, because it's the same way with like super, super gifted, just genetically gifted athletes or Adonises, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like people that just have these incredible genes and just look like fucking Greek gods or whatever, especially like when it comes to just fitness, being fat or not, that is in part at least up to the person. Still, your genetics play a role. But in terms of your face and whatnot, you know, you're just fucking born with that or whatnot. Sure. And a lot of people that look great, they don't want to acknowledge the role that like genetics plays in it, yeah, or whatever. Like, they're like, no, you got to work. This is hard work and dedication. It's like, I'm sure it might be, but that's not all. You can also acknowledge that you had a leg up, and people with rich parents are exactly the same way. Yes. Nepo babies and rich kids are exactly the same way.
Born on third base, claiming they hit a triple. And yes. For instance, me and you could do the exact same workout as Brad Pitt. But right. Our face ain't going to be Brad Pitt's face. Like, you're just born gorgeous. But my thing on it has always been, like, I just feel like if those people were honest and would say, hey, by the way, I had all the advantages in the world, and I am so thankful. And there's a lot of people that don't have those advantages in the world. Now, granted, I still had to work hard. I still had to show up. Bryce Dallas Howard, for example. Yeah. I think she's very fucking talented. I do. I 100% do. But she made this long fucking post about how, like, the way I was able to break into the business was, like, networking and workshopping and creating my own space and stuff. And it's like, oh, yeah, and my dad is literally one of one in Hollywood, one of the most legendary, iconic, two separate television shows he's iconic for, and one of the greatest director and producers of all fucking time. Like, why are you acting like that didn't at all help?
Right. Yeah. I mean, because it's just people feel like it, like, I don't know. It devalues them. Yeah, exactly. By acknowledging it. It's like, no, you do hit at what you do. It's just, it pisses people off when you don't acknowledge the leg up you had or whatever. But yeah, right. Everybody wants to seem like they come from humble beginnings. David Beckham really hit for me in that clip. I don't know his back. Is he from a working class background? Who knows? Like,
I mean, he's super. He's so pretty.
Athletes can
that
go
I'll,
either way. You
that's
know?
True. But like, he's so good looking that you're like, right. His parents had to be good looking, and good looking people usually have money because they fuck someone with money.
Yeah, it's true. Yes, us poors are normally aesthetically appealing people.
Yeah, right. Because you can only fuck other ugly people.
I definitely would have assumed he was, you know, because like, I mean, athletes, again, a great athlete can come from anywhere.
And soccer is too.
Still, yeah, soccer, you know, kids play with balls of trash in the favelas and shit and go on to the Premier League and stuff.
Yeah, there's certain sports where like having money does give you a huge leg up. I mean, having money is always going to give you a leg up in anything, but like golf, for instance, you can almost assume that if someone's a really good golfer that they grew up with money. It's not always the case. Seve Ballesteros was poor. But in soccer, bro, I mean, there's literally people that come from nothing because it's the simplest game. You just got to kick a ball into a thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Katie showed me that clip, and I thought it was, you know, perfectly on brand for this show, and we'd watch and enjoy it, and that is what we've done. And since I know you've got a tremendous amount on Houdini, and we're like, whatever, roughly halfway into the episode, I feel like you go ahead and take over. Listen, guys, cold turkey might be great on sandwiches, but there's a better way to break your bad habits, though, and I'm not talking about some weird frou-frou mind voodoo stuff from your crazy candle loving neighbor. Not talking about crystals or chakras or cheese or any of that stuff. Not talking about the moon or Mercury or whatever retrograde is. We're not talking about any of that. We're talking about our sponsor, Fume. And they look at the problem in a different way. Not everything in a bad habit is wrong. So instead of a drastic, uncomfortable change, why not just remove the bad from your habit? Fume is an innovative award-nominated device that does just that. Instead of electronics, fume is completely natural. Instead of vapor, fume uses flavored air. And instead of harmful chemicals, fume uses all natural, delicious flavors. You get it. Instead of bad, fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is always helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. Cho, tell them about it.
Boy, you were correct. Fume, good. I've always said it. It does taste great. I love it. I'm particular to the orange one because I'm a citrusy type person. But it's great. I've said many times on here, it's like, why just have regular oxygen when you can have like oxygen 2.0, you know, orange flavored oxygen. It also is a very cool little thing to fidget with as someone who, you know, has a brain that's scattered. Sometimes when I can calm myself down by fidgeting with this thing, it looks really, really cool. Looks like a teeny tiny model baseball bat. If you're into that kind of stuff, if you're weird like me, it's beautiful. Real wood. Looks like the dashboards of all my favorite rappers' cars when I was coming up. Good stuff. Fume good. Stopping is something that we all put off because it's hard. But switching to Fume is easy, enjoyable, and even fun. It's a blast. Fume has served over 100,000 customers and has thousands of success stories, and there's no reason that can't be you. Join Fume in accelerating humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up the Journey Pack today. Head to tryfume.com and use code POA to save 10% off when you get the Journey Pack today. That's tryfume.com and use code POA to save an additional 10% off your order today. Tryfume.com/POA. Code POA. It's good. Not bad. That's fine by me. Yeah, because like I said, this was going to be a 2 or 3-parter regardless of how long we went. And I'm excited for that because I still have much to learn. And frankly, I mean, what all did you know about Houdini before I brought him up? Boilerplate stuff?
Escape artist. Yeah, I've seen some stuff about some of the escapes he did. I've seen like some of the old posters for like promoting his escapes. I know he was a big deal. And I know that he got... spoiler alert, he died by getting punched in the gut weirdly or something like that, which that don't hit. And there's probably, I'm sure there's other little Houdini factoids that I've picked up along the way that I'm not calling to mind right now, but certainly not an expert.
Yeah, me either. I mean, he's ubiquitous as a, he's just one of those that like, you're almost surprised to find out that you don't actually know anything about them because you've known about them your whole life. They've just been around. Like Houdini's like Coca-Cola. I'm going to say this and feel free to disagree with me, but I'm going to say that in his genre, I mean, Houdini is like, he's like Shakespeare level for magic and that type of thing. Like in terms of being a legend and being synonymous with the craft, like, wouldn't you agree?
In the world of magic and, I mean, yeah, I guess just magic, illusionisms, I don't know, whatever you
want to
call it.
I'm not suggesting he's as popular as Shakespeare. That's not what I'm saying.
All right, well, that's what I was about to say, yeah. In the world of magic, yeah, he's definitely the closest thing they have to Shakespeare, but generally speaking, I don't think he's quite on Shakespeare's level just because Shakespeare
is. No, nobody is.
Yeah, right.
But I guess my point is, like, when someone...
Because see, that's another thing I was never clear on. Was he more of a like an escape artist specifically and do like tricks like fucking top hat, rabbit, dove, cage, shit like that? Like he just does more like David Blaine stuff. And when he started locking himself in ice cubes and shit.
Yeah, we'll get into all that, but that is what separated him. But he definitely started off as like, I want to be a standard magician. And then he sort of just like found out that he possessed these skills that made it easy for him to escape from things. One of such, spoiler, is his ability to dislocate his shoulder on command.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is wild. But I guess what I was trying to say earlier is like, you know, if someone like if someone is at a party and they give a speech like a and they like a soliloquy or something, somebody be like, oh, Billy Shakespeare over here. If someone's really smart, you go, oh, fucking Einstein. And I feel like if somebody does something magical or impressive, they're like, God damn, Houdini. He's one of those. Like, he's the standard bearer for an entire genre. You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree.
So the reason that I wanted to talk about Houdini, I actually have been reading extensively about the Kennedy family. I've been reading like all the books on Camelot and the House of Kennedy and stuff because I really want to get into Joe Kennedy and how I and I'm sure you'll agree with me. I consider like Jackie and Jack are probably as close as we had to like a royal family seeming for president. You know what I'm saying? Like they seem more royal than anything, but that's going to be put on the back burner because this weekend I was in your neck of the woods, Los Angeles. Our good buddy, friend of the show, W. Earl Brown, his daughter Anna got married, and it was at the Houdini Mansion. And I'm fucking, you know, I don't like to do stuff at all. I don't even go to weddings that are two streets down. But number one, I love Earl, I love Anna. And number two, I saw Houdini Mansion and I'm like, holy fuck, I gotta do this shit. And it was obviously wonderful. It's in Laurel Canyon. Quick note here, I did talk about this on Well Read, but just in case these people don't listen to that, my favorite thing that happened, and one of the reasons I wanted to discuss Houdini further, my wife pumped her titties in Houdini's living room. And I took a cap of mushroom and washed it down with that titty milk in Houdini's living room. So, like, I really got to be a part of history. You know, it felt magical in that moment. This, you talk about a palatial estate, man. And apparently this place, it's in Laurel Canyon. And apparently, like, Houdini sort of started Laurel Canyon. Like, there wasn't nothing there. Like, it was just, you know, a canyon. And then he put this big fucking house there. And dude, it is unbelievable. And there's so much about Houdini that we'll talk about that people don't know if it's true or if he just made it up, because one of his big philosophies was, he said, no matter how you cut it, a magician is a liar. You know what I mean? A magician is a liar. So he would just make shit up all the time. But they did. So there was a rumor that he had a secret tunnel at his house that he would use to get into the city unnoticed or to meet his mistresses and stuff. And it was, people were like, oh, that's bullshit. Well, one of the tour guides showed me the fucking tunnel. Like, it's there. It's there. And it's very discreetly located within these bushes and stuff. And I mean, this house is a, I mean, it's like Dragonstone, dude. Like, it's unbelievable.
That I never knew really how much money he had. So obviously,
exactly.
He was,
me too.
Right, because I thought, I don't know what I thought. Was he in movies and shit? Like,
he was interested. So he, and the reason that I kind of want to talk about vaudeville for a second,
Because
where does the money come from?
I always thought it's like most of what I ever heard about Houdini was like
public.
He went
stunts
to this bridge. He put himself in a straitjacket, dangled off the bridge. All of the public came, and the women fainted, and all this shit. And he fucking, you know, and he somehow got out of it at the last second. And I've always thought it's like, well, how do you make money off that? Like, you're not charging. They're like publicity stunts.
Yes.
But publicity for what? Is he then selling out arenas? Did they do that back then?
I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but I'm glad that you brought that up because I was the same way. Like, when I heard Houdini Mansion, I was like, I knew this guy hit, but like, I didn't know that he was able to monetize doing these public things. But it's the same thing as like David Blaine. Like, when he does the stuff in Times Squares, anybody can see it, but then he'll be in Vegas on a residency. And so Houdini did the same thing. All of these things that he did was because he knew, he's like, I don't want to spend money to take out ads in the paper. So what he would do was he would just go to town and tell all these reporters that he was doing this fucking wild shit, and they would be compelled to write about it because it's insane, right? And that's how he got publicity, so that he could then sell out the vaudeville theaters and stuff. He also used that fame to he was sort of like Beethoven and Mozart in the sense that he was often commissioned to perform for the royals, and that's a really big fucking paycheck. You know what I'm saying? Like, they would give Houdini probably the equivalent of hundreds of thousands of dollars now just to come escape from a straitjacket at some duchess's fucking birthday party.
Yeah, but I mean, also, but he was having to like take a fucking boat over there, wasn't he?
Or like, yeah,
you know, yeah, what I mean, like, born it's a in the huge 1800s. Time commitment for him to do that one show back then. I was just thinking, like, logistically, I was going to say, it's like, dude, imagine like working the road back then. You know what I mean? Like, just the logistics of it, knowing where the hell you are, how to get to anywhere. We didn't have interstates yet or nothing. Like, fucking airport, there's no infrastructure. I mean, there is infrastructure, but not like there is today. Like, finding a way to get the word out and sell tickets and fill up the room and all this shit. It's just like, it's a wild thing to think about.
Yeah, and let's stay here for a minute, because what you're talking about is the vaudeville circuit, or, you know, we talked about minstrel shows and stuff earlier. For African Americans, it was the Chitlin circuit. They would have to do the lower tiered theaters and stuff like that. But yeah, man, like, vaudeville was a whole different beast. And, you know, when you became somebody like Houdini, you were then the marquee, you know, entertainment for vaudeville, and eventually you're going to break out to doing your own, you know, personal shows. But like, he gets his start doing, you know, vaudeville stuff. Him and his brother actually started together as a team. They were the Houdinis, and the name Houdini, this is not like, that's not his name at all. He was born Eric Weiss in Budapest, Hungary. He gets Houdini because he, number one, they changed their names because of Jew reasons. And his favorite book when he was a kid was The Great Houdin, spelled Houdin, who was like this magician from like the late 1700s or some shit. And so they became the Houdini brothers, and they would basically do street magic. You know, they would have their corner, and they were pulling rabbits out of hats. They were making quarters appear from behind people's ears, and they would have their, you know, their little newsboy hats down there. And they would, you know, people would give them, you know, quarters and stuff like that. They'd take it home for their mother, who was very, you know, very poor. But yeah, in vaudeville, basically how it works is, if you don't know what the vaudeville is, it's vaudeville, I believe, what is it? It comes from the French word vaudeville, referring to the songs of the vaudeville region of France. It's a variety show, you know? So Saturday Night Live sort of has roots in vaudeville a little bit, because it wouldn't just be like, you would have a singer, you would have a dancer, you would have a juggler, you would have a magician, you would have a tandem, Abbott and Costello. This is where they got their start, you know? And yeah, dude, the circuit. Yeah.
And also, people may not realize, like, you'd have all these different acts, and all these acts were replicated all around the country. And
yes,
and everything was like, you'd have, like you said, you'd have a duo, and it's like, you know, fat guy, skinny guy duo.
Right.
Right. Abbott and Costello, they hit real hard, whatever, Laurel and Hardy, but like, there were tons of those.
Yes.
And a lot of them were doing the same exact routines all around the country, you know, on the same nights or whatever, because people like just took other people's acts and stuff back then. Like, it was like common practice. So you'd have that, and then you'd have maybe like a kid act or something. You know what I mean? Like, you got something that uses kids or something like that.
Yeah.
Or
Yeah.
Like, or a monkey yeah. act, you know.
Monkeys
like,
were huge.
Yeah, right. I know. That's what I'm saying. They had all this shit, but in each genre of vaudeville act, there were tons of performers who did literally the exact same thing.
It wasn't even considered like stealing back then.
It was like standard practice. It was like, that's just what you do, which has always been wild to me.
It's super wild. I think, and I could be wrong, this is just going off of memory, but like, sometimes they were referred to as like trunk shows, because an act would have a trunk that literally had all their shit in it. And these people would like sell trunks, like, oh, do you want to be a vaudeville act? Here's your trunk. It's got all the shit in it, right? And so they would, like, this person would be like, I'm in New York, I'm doing this act, then we'll travel, we'll do the same act. And, like, you would try to communicate with all these people of, like, hey, when you were in Milwaukee last, did you, which act did you do? Did you do this one? And they're like, yeah, okay, fuck, I'll do this one. And there's like a separate script or whatever. There's files of jokes and stuff like that. And this predates stand-up comedy as we know it. But there would be MCs who would go up there and kind of tell jokes and stuff like that. And during these days, you had to have like all your material like worked out ahead of time so that it could be accredited by like whatever the FCC was of the day and shit like that, because vaudeville was supposed to be a clean show. If you want dirty stuff, you go to do burlesque. And this is actually where the term working blue came from. Did you know this?
Maybe. I've probably heard it from Cliff Nesteroff before or something, but
yes. A lot of this is me remembering Cliff stuff. So, by the way, if you want, in my opinion, the greatest book on comedy that has ever been written, and it's not even close, The Comedians by Cliff Nesterhoff is an absolute must. It is tremendous. And also, I'll plug him. He's got a new book out that I can't remember the title of it, but I love the concept. He's basically, it's about cancel culture, but he's coming at it from the point of like, this is nothing new. And like, he shares all these clips, newspaper clips from like the 20s and 30s of like uproars over comedians' jokes and stuff like that.
Right.
We're like, basically, nothing is new. It's just that we have Twitter now. Thank you very much, which we've been saying for years. Working blue was they would have these files of jokes or whatever, and they would have them written down. And if one of them was too risque, the manager of the theater would literally put it in a blue folder, right? He'd put it in a blue folder. So if you did those jokes, you were working blue. That in which, like me and you, we be working blue. Like, you know, I don't consider us filthy comedians, but we blue. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Anywho, I've thought about that a million times too. Like, they would have to do most of it by train. You know what I mean? Like, me and you talk about like how wild it must have been in the 90s before GPS.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean? And even before that, because like I remember the MapQuest days where like, and that was like a huge advantage, but you'd have to print them out. And like, if you missed an exit, you're fucked, right? Well, dude, these people are solely relying on trains running on time, them not getting mugged, them just being able to get off the train and expect a wino to be able to point them in the right direction of wherever the fucking theater was. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
So, anyways, that's vaudeville, and that's where Houdini sort of gets like his, you know, kind of start, as many people did back then. But like you were asking earlier, he did the vaudeville scene was like, that's what entertainment was in America. And the downfall of vaudeville was not only radio, which radio had a lot to do with it at start, because people were like, it's similar to kind of what happened with the pandemic and podcast. People were like, wait, I don't have to go out to be entertained anymore. I can be entertained in my own home. Okay. And then when movies came along, it was like, well, dude, this is over. You know what I'm saying? And then when I'll say this, a lot of the vaudeville people actually found great success in the silent movies, because the silent movies were all visible gags. You know, they were just like pratfalls, all this type of shit. And like
Fatty Arbuckle, he was a vaudeville man, wasn't he?
Fatty Arbuckle is probably one of the hittest fats to ever fall.
Yes.
Me and 100%. You have talked a million times about how, you know, I genuinely believe I was born 100 years too late.
Yeah. I was going to say like, dude, you're not that fat, but then I was like, but 1900s though,
I'd be,
you know,
fat
what I mean?
As fuck.
Yeah, right. like everybody was fucking rail thin back then. You ever like watched any of Fatty Arbuckle's shit?
Yeah.
It's like still
it's
impressive.
It's
in
great.
My opinion. Like he does all these there's one where he's like chopping meat up in a butcher shop or something, and he's like flipping the knife around and it all, you know, like fucking pins his apron to the table, whatever. All this like slapsticky stuff, but it's like, you know, not easy to do.
No,
you
know?
Like
the choreography
had nothing in the way of special effects or anything like that back then. It's like, you know, like you're seeing it and you're like, he just did all of this.
Yes.
And this shit was not easy to do, you know. It's
right.
Like it's still kind of impressive.
Dude, it's insanely impressive. And like, that's why, like, did I do an episode on Charlie Chaplin yet? Because I want to.
I don't think so.
I maintain, and I'm including the silent ones too. Like, Modern Times is they had a little bit of talking in it, but it was dubbed over. It's mainly a silent film. But a lot of Charlie Chaplin and all these movies, in my opinion, hold up because the humor is not references. It's slapstick and it's physical comedy. And physical comedy, that will be as funny as it was then, as it is now, and in 400 years. When you get into, like, you know, like the movie Superbad, we all love it, but I'm certain in 200 years, nobody will understand the references, the comedic references they're making. So it loses a little bit of its intrinsic value, whereas fat guy falling off of a ladder is fucking timeless and great. And yeah, like a lot of these dudes, like W.C. Fields got his start in vaudeville. Like I said, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, the Marx Brothers, Mae West, like all these people started doing vaudeville and their careers really translated to the silent films. Now, then the talkies come in and you've got some of these people who, unfortunately, not only did they have annoying voices that it just didn't work, but also their style. They had grown up and they were ingrained in, I need the person in the last row to hear me as easily as the person in the front row. So they had no concept of being mic'd up or how to be subtle. Everything was fucking huge, right?
Right. Right.
So anyways, that's vaudeville. But now we will, before we wrap up, I will talk about the early life of Harry Houdini. Like I said, Harry Houdini, born Eric Weiss. He's born in 1874 in Budapest, Hungary. His name was originally Eric. The family spelling was E-H-R-I-C-H, Weiss. But then they immigrated to the U.S. and he took on the stage name, like I said, Harry Houdini, inspired by French magician Jean-Eugène Robert Houdin. Where do you think they come from Budapest, Hungary? Where do you think that they immigrated to in America?
I actually do know this 100%
because I was just
there not that long ago. I've been there twice now. You were supposed to be with me the first time, and I'm just remembering now that you didn't come.
I had a mental breakdown.
Yes, and that's fine. But I was thinking, I was like, he was there too, but no, you weren't there.
I
wasn't. Then since then, I've been back. And both times, you'll be utterly unsurprised to hear, they're pretty proud of it. They've got it plastered all over the place there.
Yeah.
And both times, I've been like, wait, what? Oh, that's wild. So I happen to know because of all that he's from Appleton, Wisconsin. That's where that's where his family went to. Yes. And in Appleton, they've got a lot of shit named after Houdini. They've got his face up on a lot of stuff. So, which, I mean, you know, I don't blame them. They're not, they ain't got a lot else to hang their hats on in Appleton, which is a lovely town, for the record.
Right. Well, I'm sure it is. I've never been because, like I said, I had a fucking mental breakdown. But I just thought it was odd. Like, that's a weird place, in my opinion, for them to have migrated. Now, his father was a rabbi. They were of the Jewish faith, something that obviously Houdini didn't sort of yell about all the time because of just how Jews have and still are, unfortunately, treated. It's so wild because, like, and we don't have to get into no, like, deep Jewish stuff, but but, like, how
we are the two to do it, though, for sure. So
I agree.
Let's go.
If it is true that Jews run Hollywood, how did they ever acquire this power? Because for a long time, if you were Jewish and in Hollywood, you had to pretend that you were not Jewish. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think the way that they would explain that away is, as with all things with the Jews,
covert.
They do it in secrecy. Right?
Yeah. Like,
they're sneaky, Joe.
In the shadows.
They're sneaky in the shadow. Right. So they're pulling the strings running Hollywood, but like to have success in the theaters, have people pay to see you as an actor, whatever, you gotta hide the fact that you're of Jewish descent. You gotta change your name to Cruz or whatever else to get the mainstream audiences to come out, but in secret you're pushing all the Jew buttons and making all the Jew money and stuff.
Okay,
is what they would tell you, right?
Well, I was gonna say, if I may, speaking hypothetics here, that does make sense. You know, like, that does seem very much like what it is. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, look, we don't know what it's like to be a group of people who literally have to work in secrecy. And I'm not fucking saying that, like, they're Jews' secret government or whatever, but, like, we don't know what it's like for a people to try to get ahead when they have such a severe disadvantage. But anyways, I just found that interesting. His father was a rabbi in Appleton, Wisconsin, but it didn't work out because his father just never learned English. Like, he just came over there for some reason thinking that if he was speaking Hungarian, that the word of God would translate for him somehow.
That is hilariously stupid.
It's like, so stupid.
Even for, like, a God person, you know what I mean? Like a hardcore God person. That is so, so dumb to actually believe that.
And I agree. And I don't know how much of this particular part of it is true, because I did just watch. And by the way, I'm going to recommend this to everybody. Did you know that Adrian Brody played Houdini in a 2-part little miniseries?
No. On what?
I don't even know on what. I just bought it on Apple TV because that's where it was. This was back in like 2014 he did it. And it's fucking awesome. Now, because of it, I found out, I was like, oh, that's not actually true. That's Houdini the myth, not the, you know, legend or whatever. But it's really awesome, and it's almost shot a little bit darker, I'd say, but kind of like how Guy Ritchie did Sherlock Holmes, you know? Like, it's very fucking entertaining. And in the movie, you know, basically they make it seem like these Jews from the synagogue come to him one day and they're like, look, you don't get to be our rabbi no more on account of you don't speak English and people over here speak English. And like in the movie, they portray it as he's just completely blown the fuck away that would be, you know, a criteria for communicating with people as your job.
I'm not understanding how any of that, like, what was going on with his dad? Is that like, that's I get, like, I mean, I, you know, it's been a hotly debated thing in this country for a long time. You know, move to this country, speak the fucking language, right? Like that whole thing. And it's like, depending on what you're doing,
you don't have to
really care what language you speak generally. But like, if you're coming over here with the express purpose of like shepherding a flock of English speakers, like your whole job is like,
communicating
the word of God to a group of like-minded believers who do not speak your language. Like, what the fuck do you think is going to happen? Like, how do you think that's going to work? It's so,
I'm so, so glad. Dumb. I'm so glad to hear you say that out loud, because that is exactly how I feel about that.
Well, it'd be like a Mexican comic moving up here to LA. Because that would even make more, because that dude could hit in LA.
Right.
It'd be like a Mexican comic moving to Atlanta and trying to start doing stand up in Atlanta with no English whatsoever, just pure Spanish. Even that, we got a lot of Spanish speakers in this country.
We do. Hungarian comic. Yes.
Hungary. But no, still, why I'm making it Mexican. You'll be a Hungarian comic.
Because that's how we deal with it in this country. Like the most, when you hear someone say you moved to this country, speak the language, we're mainly like people here are very upset. Like, why I got to press 2 for English? Fuck that. Which, by the way, never in a million, like they always say, they go, it don't even say press 1 for English. It says press 1 for Spanish, press 2 for English. That has never happened. It is always fucking press 2 for Spanish. I've never fucking heard English not be the main one. That is such complete made up horseshit. But
if it is press 1 for Spanish, it's or stay on the line, because the default is English.
The default is English. Right. But even if that weren't the case, it's such a stupid thing to give a fuck about. But where I will agree with those people, and it's what you said, if, however, you come here and you try to have a job in communications, then it probably would suit you well to speak English. Like I would never move to goddamn France and just assume that I could keep speaking English and hit over there. Like, as a comedian, you probably could, because there's a lot of expats and stuff. Yeah. But like, I'm not going to go over there and like work for a French call center and just be like, here you go. Yeah. Sorry that I went call center, but everybody fucking knows why I went call center.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good example, I feel like, because, you know.
Communication. Anyways, his dad. So there's I'm mentioning this about his dad, and there's a lot of like sort of mystery between the Houdini's relationship with his dad, because there's part of people who feel like, you know, obviously this made their family poor. It's not like a rabbi makes I don't know how much money a rabbi makes nowadays. Like if you're, you know, a preacher can make a pretty damn good living unless you're like a tiny country preacher. But the thing is, even if you're a tiny country preacher, if you have 300 people who you can convince that God wants them, you to give them all your money, you can make a fuck, and you don't have to pay taxes. But because
the
he's
building
not
building fund,
ain't the build, touched a,
ain't put a dough knob on that, on that motherfucker.
For those of you that don't know what we're talking about, that is a Steve Harvey bit, and it is, in my opinion, one of the funniest and truest bits that has ever been from the Kings of Comedy, if you want to go. Possibly, yes. I'm definitely going to say that's on the Mount Rushmore of sets. Of just a one person. Actually, you know what? Everybody involved in that tour had arguments for the Mount Rushmore of sets.
Right.
Just like Bernie Mac. Unbelievable. Cedric, oh my God. Like, it might be the funniest stand-up special that has ever been put out. It's hard to beat.
Yeah. No, buddy, it's absolute flames, dog.
Yeah.
And Steve Harvey, his bits in it, but also, like, his in-between shit is the MC.
It's unreal. It's a masterclass.
The crowd work and shit, that dude leaves his jacket in the seat or whatever, and he gives him hell for whatever, and he's like, what is it would you say that you do? You know, and he's like, what's he say? School. He's like, what kind of school? Computer school. You say stuff like that, but boogie, that just lets us know what you lets us further know what it is you
really. You really do.
He's like, what do you learn at computer school? Computer technology.
Then he just calls him out for being a drug dealer in front of his girlfriend.
It's so funny.
Oh, God. Anyways, this obviously landed the Houdini or the Weiss family, not in the literal poorhouse, but like they didn't have a lot of money. And there's a lot of people that speculate that like Houdini was, maybe ashamed of his father, because clearly Houdini had a lot of drive. You know, this would inspire him to get good at magic so that he could bring his mother coins and try to help provide for the family. But also there was this thing. And I know it was in the show, but while I was watching it, I was like, before I just say this as fact, I'm definitely going to need to do further research on it. Because in the show, Houdini is explaining that the reason that they immigrated to America in the first place is because his father took some sort of religious and moral stand against one of the princes of Hungary and stabbed him in a sword fight. Right.
I'm starting to think Houdini's dad was a fucking dumbass, dude.
Yes,
it's some bitch needs to get out of his own way. Goddamn, you can't go around stabbing princes and not learning English and expect things to just work out. Okay.
Well, that didn't happen at all.
But they just made that up for the show?
Houdini himself made that up because it was part of the illusion, and they put it in the show, but don't necessarily. Now I've still got a couple minutes left. They don't really say that Houdini made it up, but I think from what I've noticed in the show and from what I've read, what they're doing with the show is presenting the real stuff of Houdini, but also the mythology as if it's coming from Houdini's point of view. You know what I'm saying? So like in Houdini's world, this did happen. It's sort of like the Elton John biopic, you know, where Elton John said, because he had a large hand in it, he's like, absolutely, a lot of this isn't true. But you have to understand that the point of this biopic is that I was on drugs the whole time. So this biopic should look like a person's remembrance of them being on drugs and everything running together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We've got a recurring theme in this episode about like embellishment for artistic purposes or whatever.
And I'm for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Generally, it depends, you know. Like I said, that stuff that old Husson was doing, you know.
If when we're talking about moral stuff, and again, as I've said, if you libel somebody, then that's
also, I feel like if you use a lie to give yourself like a
credibility
stance, it's like you use a lie to give yourself some sort of like superiority or moral high ground, or like a, you know what I mean, like a leg to stand on and like a moral argument or something.
Right,
that ain't it. I'm not down with that.
That's very much not it. So he starts doing the magic when he's young, and then at 9 years old, he joins the circus as a trapeze artist, which is pretty fucking, like, that's pretty impressive. Like, I feel like trapeze takes a lot of time to hit at, and he's already doing it at 9.
Yeah, it's wild. But that's how a lot of those types of things are. It's like, they, you know what I mean?
Born
a lot of that circus-y type shit.
Yeah.
They all started when they're, like, young kids, you know?
Yeah,
it kind of sort of makes sense if you got trapeze shit around, because kids are like little fucking monkeys. They love swinging around on stuff and
they'll
shit like
that. They'll get
good
at it
if you
let
them.
If
you got like a trapeze set up and you throw a kid at it, they'll probably fuck around with it quite a bit, I would imagine.
That's
as long as
they
don't break their neck. But I'm sure back then, tons of them broke their neck and they were just like, oh, well, name the next one. You know,
luckily, we had 12.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
So he starts doing the trapeze stuff at 9, and then when he gets a little bit older, him and his brother, I don't know if you know this, his brother was also a magician, and actually a pretty well-respected, you know, magician, but obviously paled in comparison. Like, it's similar to how, like, you know, Kevin Farley has a stand-up career, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's
Gallagher
very funny.
Gallagher,
yeah, but like, and it's unfortunate because Kevin Farley is really goddamn funny. It's just that your fucking brother is Chris Farley. Well, his
Brian Regan's brother is a road dog too, right?
Accurate. Neil Brennan's brother, Kevin.
Yep.
There's Chris Rock's entire family.
Yep.
You know, it's
true
just
that.
Like one of them's gonna hit harder, and they're all the weigh-ins, you know. But anyways, they started out together as a tandem, and his brother was older, so like he was the magician and Harry was the assistant. But like pretty soon, it was just like you could not deny how hard Harry Houdini hit, and these roles were reversed. Now, something I want to get into before we close out here, because I don't know if I'll get to it next episode. Him and his brother, there was always rumors that they hated each other, because Harry, he works with his brother, right? And they were always partners. Well, Harry then gets married to Wilhelmina Bess Rainier, and then she becomes his onstage assistant. He replaces her with his brother, and his reasoning is that she fit in a trunk better. The specific trunk that he had. And she would actually, they got married after only 2 weeks of knowing each other. Like, they met, Houdini was performing with his brother at Coney Island, and she was part of this like dancing act called the Floral Sisters. And like, he sees her and is like, oh my God, she's beautiful. He does some magic tricks for her.
I gotta put her in a trunk.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to make something disappear in her. You know what I'm saying? But anyways, like, they meet, and they're both, you know, creative in their own right. And they get married after a couple of weeks, and she would often speculate, like, did you really only marry me because I fit in your goddamn trunk? Like, is that really what happened? But they stayed married, not to, you know, go far away from this. They stayed married, you know, their whole life. But in closing, I'll say that when he replaces his brother with her, there were rumors everywhere that the Houdini brothers hated each other, and that like he felt betrayed, and this was in all the papers because Houdini had already made like a pretty big name for himself. And it's true that it was in all the papers and that there were all these rumors, but they were the ones that started the rumors, and they did it on purpose. He wasn't mad
pretty
at
slick.
All he it's wasn't
like
mad
pro wrestling type shit almost. Yeah,
that's exactly what I thought. His brother wasn't mad at all. Matter of fact, his brother had been wanting to go solo for a while. And so they came up with this idea of, we'll create this family feud. And anytime Harry's in the paper, his brother's going to be in the paper. And they would, speaking of wrestling, they would cut promos on each other, like in the paper, like talking about how, oh, he ain't shit. You know, he learned all that bullshit from me. One of them would say, like, I'm going to do this great big thing. And then the other one would be like, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to do this other thing 2 weeks later, and mine's going to fucking hit harder. And people would go to both because they wanted to compare, you know, and contrast, like, which one was the actual best. So they remained friends, you know, until their death. All of that was just completely for the stage, which I think is great. And I'm going to end there because there's so much more. There's so much more that I want to get into. But once I start on the next thing, I can't do it without talking about for an hour. So I would like to get some air mail, if that's okay with you, Trey.
Yeah.
And remember, everybody, you can email us at puttingonairs@gmail.com. We really, really appreciate you doing so. Here we go. Subject line, squirrels. Trey ain't going to like this.
Oh, God.
Hey there, I just wanted to let you know that someone posted a video of a squirrel mourning another squirrel in the Discord. That's a reminder, by the way. We have our own Putting On Airs Discord. It's in the hashtag The Great Squirrel Debate channel. Apparently on our Discord, Trey, there is a separate channel that is just people constantly going back and forth about the squirrel.
Yeah.
So join our Discord, everybody, because that sounds like a fucking whole lot of fun. Subject line here, Marilyn Manson. I am turning 47 this week, and the missing rib and the Wonder Years story was all anybody talked about, especially the Wonder Years when he started hitting the scene, to the point I watched him hit the main stage at the Leeds and Reading Festival, headlining with Slipknot and Eminem, and everyone knew the self blowjob rumors and the Wonder Years. There's some misspellings here, whatever. We were all amazed he could smash a 2-hour set missing a rib. He and Slipknot smashed, but Eminem turned up with D12, and that did not hit at all. Don't you have to assume that the reason he says that is because he wanted Eminem all to himself and not with D12?
I would assume so. Yeah, this guy. He said the Leeds and Reading Festival. So this is a Brit, or yes, it's an American who was in England for all this. But I saw Eminem once at Bonnaroo, and it was great. I had a fucking great time, but he did also make some choices that I thought was pretty wild.
Rap is hard to translate to live. I've always said it.
Yeah, and I still thought he was real good. But if he'd had D12 with him, it probably wouldn't have for me, frankly. Because
you just want Slim. Yeah, I get it. Subject line, Wonder Self Suck. Hey guys, loving the podcast. Just wanted you to give an insight into how global the Marilyn Manson rib rumor truly is. As a Welsh boy growing up in Germany, I can confirm that indeed in the late 90s in the UK and Germany, the rumor spread like wildfire amongst us horny little scumbags, both that he had a rib removed and that he was the kid from the Wonder Years. I now live in Dubai, which is a melting pot of tones of different nationalities. You guys need to do an episode on this amazing future city, as you called it. I've asked around and can confirm the rumor at some point in its life made it to South Africa, Poland, the Philippines, and Tunisia. Keep up the good work, guys. Skew! Not sure how to spell that. They spelled it exactly correct. My friend.
I didn't even realize that, like, Marilyn Manson hit in Tunisia.
Me either.
You know what I mean? Like, that's wild. He was like a straight up global superstar.
Yeah.
Like, I never really,
or at least the story of him sucking his dick was a global superstar.
But there's no way that would spread or be noteworthy if he himself wasn't noteworthy in that place. You know what I mean?
Right.
He'd have to be famous there for the story to have any kind of impact.
No, I agree. And finally here, this is a really good one. Subject line, 2 British flag emojis, upper dicker, 2 eggplant emojis, / Marilyn Manson ribs and blowjobs. Hello, boys. Hello, boys. My name is Rune. Yes, you can read this out. I live in Sussex, England, just down the road from the villages of Upper Dicker and Lower Dicker. I shit you not. Yes, the rumors about Marilyn Manson having a rib removed so that he could give himself a blowjob, presumably whilst in a state of Upper Dicker, definitely hit our shores. I think this was in the late 1990s, and it was after the rumors that Cher had a set of ribs removed so that she could fit into those tight PVC outfits had died down. I never heard that. Did you hear the one about Cher?
No.
That's wild.
No.
Yada yada. Heard the story about Paul from the Wonder Years. Conclusion, there's not much resemblance, and the Venn diagram for Paul and Marilyn doesn't overlap very much. The other rumor that's much older is the one about Richard Gere and the gerbil. That yes. one was common knowledge back in the 1980s. I'd never thought about how these rumors spread before the internet until you mentioned it, and it really is quite wild now that I think about it. I love the podcast. I've been listening for a few months, and I'm gradually, clearly, on the back catalog. Thank you for explaining the word skew the other day. I thought it was just a thing you two said. I mean, it kind of is. I didn't know it was used more widely. I noticed you use the word hit in various ways that I've also never heard before, too. Is that also a Southern thing? I've never noticed other Americans using it the way you guys do. Thanks for the POA podcast. I love you guys, and stay fancy, motherfuckers. Rune.
I've noticed every now and then people will use hit the way yes. that we use it. It's just not Agreed. Ubiquitous or like super popular, but it does pop up like on the internet and otherwise. Usually that it's in the context, the most common context is somebody Music. Says something hits different.
Hits
usually.
Different. Yeah.
But I've heard people just be like, oh, this, you know, that macaroni and cheese look like it hits or whatever. Yes. This macaroni and cheese is hitting. This shit is yeah. hitting. There's a Danny Brown lyric. I don't remember how it goes, but he says something like something. Cause the dice game was hitting.
Yeah.
It goes back in like, you know, in rap music, like most things, you know, appropriated from black. Yes. It's black in origin.
Like anything good, black anything people figure hits, it out first. Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure there's a Will Smith lyric from the 90s where he goes, the lady of my life, she's hitting, hit her with the drop top, with the ribbons, crib for my mom on the outskirts of Philly. You trying to flex on me? Don't be silly. Getting jiggy with it. Now, if that was Jade at that time, she don't hit, actually.
No, she don't
clear
hit.
That up, just so everybody knows, that was not true. She don't hit.
Yeah, but, she wouldn't let me come on her show because I refuse to argue with my mother.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. You were going to be on like Red Table Talks or whatever. And
they wanted me to go on Red Table Talk. And like we were there for the production meeting or whatever. And they were like, we would like to have the family thing. So like, you know, your mom and dad, you know, and they were like, do they think differently than you? And I was like, yeah, of course they do. And the way that they had like set it down was like they 100% wanted me to like lambast my parents on television. And I really wanted the publicity, don't get me wrong, but I was like, I'm not going to come on here and try to make my mama look stupid. And they were like, okay, thanks, bye.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Anyways, I've always thought with hit, like, people, how can you, I just don't see how you can't just look at it and understand the context. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, when there's a song, it's like, that's a hit, right? When you're rich, you're hitting the big time. Right. Like, I just don't understand people who see it and are like, I have absolutely no idea what this means. And I can't do detective work even a right. little bit. But that's what it is. No, it's not a Southern thing. It is a black thing, but it is a Southern thing for Southern people to steal things from black people. So, yes, it is a Southern
yes,
thing.
There you go. Yeah, that's it.
All right. Trey, well, where are you going to be this weekend, buddy?
Tonight and tomorrow, if you get this when it comes out, I'm in Tacoma, Washington. I was here last night, too. Hopefully it's hitting. I'm sure yeah. it will be. I'm going to be in Boston, Chicago, Phoenix, the Carolinas coming up. So go to treycrowder.com and get your tickets. And also our book around here and over yonder. You can get it wherever you get books. You can find the link on treycrowder.com. You can get the audio book on Audible. It hits. Any version Does of it hits. It's hitting for people. So if you don't have it already, you should get it. And that'll do it for me.
Agreed. Thursday, October 19th. So coming up, Chattanooga. Hey, y'all. That's where I started my comedy career, and I'm back for the first time in a while headlining one night only at the Comedy Catch. You can go to thecomedycatch.com for those tickets. I will also be, this is just announced, I'll be at the Gray Eagle in Asheville, North Carolina, December 28th with friends of the show, Good Cop, Rad Cop. And I'm here to tell you, if you've seen me in Asheville before, this will be a completely different show because Good Cop, Rad Cop is a musical comedy duo, and we are working on some joint productions. So it's going to be something else. So there you go. But Thursday, October 19th, come see me, Chattanooga. Get the book. And as always, stay
fancy,
motherfuckers.
Here's Lydia Lovelace.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cunt, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.
NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. Woo!
As an adult, don't we all miss spring break? Nothing like taking a week off from all your responsibilities. Well, here's the next best thing for adults, a spring break from house payments. SaveWithConrad.com can help you get rid of all your credit card debt just like that. We're routinely helping our listeners save $500, $600, $700, even $800 a month. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this, but check this out, no house payments for 2 months at SaveWithConrad.com.